Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Music has helped forge an extraordinary path for Cherokee musical artist Rita Coolidge. Her voice has helped amp up some of the most famous songs from the 60s and 70s. And her solo career brought the world songs like this.
Use your friends and you use me. That's where your story ends. And I turn around and love you, baby. Never in my wildest dreams, even when I'd made.
We'll hear more from Rita Coolidge on our pre-recorded July Native in the Spotlight right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Trump administration is moving forward with its energy plan in hopes of creating jobs and boosting U.S. energy independence. President Trump signed an executive order Tuesday which lifts regulations on coal. It also lifts restrictions on the production of oil, natural gas, and shale energy.
My action today is the latest in a series of steps to create American jobs and to grow American wealth. We're ending the theft of American prosperity and rebuilding our beloved country. We approved the permit to finally build the Keystone XL pipeline and cleared the way to completion of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Thousands and thousands of jobs.
Environmentalists and a group of Democratic senators, including from Western states, have raised concerns about the order, saying it reverses initiatives to combat climate change. Meanwhile, in the tribal fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline, the leader of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe says the tribe's committed to fighting the project after receiving word this week that oil is present in the pipeline underwater in North Dakota. In a statement Tuesday, Chairman Dave Archambault reiterated that the tribe will not stop its legal battle. On Tuesday, two Los Angeles City Council members introduced a motion to start a conversation about the city divesting funds from Wells Fargo Bank due to its financial ties to the Dakota Access Pipeline. City Council member Mitch O'Farrell says he wants to send a message to financial institutions that Los Angeles is a national leader on the environment. The city holds millions of dollars with the bank. The motion will go before the Budget and Finance Committee. Last year, the City Council approved a resolution opposing construction of the pipeline. Many families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls say they do not know how they will be expected to take part in a national investigation in Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the highly anticipated investigation is expected to begin formal hearings in May.
A coalition of family members from Manitoba says it's still in the dark about travel costs and emotional support and other victim services. And it worries that the inquiry will not provide enough support or answers. Hilda Anderson-Pierce is the co-chair of the Manitoba Missing and Murdered Women and Girls Coalition. She says many families can't access information about the inquiry because they don't have access to the internet.
I'm pretty well-versed on the subject matter of the inquiry, like just learning about it and stuff like that. Not even the inquiry, but the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I feel myself that I'm in the dark about this inquiry, that there's very little information being provided.
Some of the questions being asked include how many communities the Inquiry Commission will visit, and will there be subsidies for travel costs, therapy for emotional supports for those who feel the trauma of retelling their stories, and will there be access to traditional First Nations ceremonies. The inquiry will look at the systemic causes of violence against Indigenous women and girls and why the rate of reported violence against them is three times that of non-Aboriginal women. Interim findings are expected in November, with a final report expected in December of next year. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Native American radio and diversity in media was mentioned during a U.S. House Appropriations budget hearing on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Tuesday in Washington. President Trump's budget proposes to eliminate CPB funding. Advocates of public broadcasting say rural stations and those who cannot afford paid subscriptions would be hit hard. CPB President Patricia Harrison told lawmakers public broadcasting costs each citizen about $1.35 per year. She urged lawmakers to keep the investment, saying it pays off in areas of education, public safety, and civic leadership. There are more than 50 native radio stations and a handful of television stations and projects which serve Indian country. National Native News receives CPB funding. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting science, technology, and engineering careers through a partnership with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today is providing us with a special moment to catch up with one Native musician that has, at times, stood behind some of the biggest names in music on the planet. And she's also used her voice to help usher in a full sound to some of the most notable songs in the past century. I'm talking about Rita Coolidge, Cherokee songwriter and singer and now writer. This summer, we caught up with Rita to hear about her life, legacy, and what she's put on the pages of her memoir, Delta Lady. Today's show is pre-recorded, so our phone lines are closed, but our social media lines are open. Feel free to send us a tweet anytime during the hour. And now we're going to go to our visit with Rita Coolidge. She started off with giving us a glance at her tribal roots.
My father, my parents both passed in 2012, but my father was Cherokee and my mother was Cherokee and Scott. And I think from the time I was a small child up in the northeastern part of Tennessee, you know, I think that we always embraced our native roots, and I think it's because my father had grown up in Texas and had felt the sting of prejudice his whole life, and he wanted to make sure that that his children knew who they were and where they came from and embraced our heritage. And it's always been the greatest gift from my father and my grandmother.
Rita, there's been a time in your life where you totally focused in on this and brought a lot of light to your own Cherokee Nation. Anything you want to share about that time in your life and connecting, I guess, the world to your music and your heritage?
Well, yeah, my sister Priscilla and I have, I think, from the time we were old enough to even be aware of anything, we always embraced our native blood, and at some point, I think that it became important for us, as we had promised our grandmothers, that we would use our gift of music to reach out to people through our songs and with our voices. And when we formed Walela in, I think it was 1996, it really felt like we had come home. And when we did our first recording, our first Walela CD, and just received so much from the Native community, but not just the Native community, all people suddenly were aware of this music and what we were trying to say. And our audience expanded, and literally we felt that first CD just grew wings and just went everywhere. There was one woman who called my sister one day and said, "I just want to share with you that I just had put my Walela CD on in my apartment, and she said suddenly it felt like it was everywhere. And she said I walked out the door, and everyone in the building at the same time had started the CD, and she said it was like angels all around. And those kinds of experiences were repeated to me by other people. So there was something so magical and deeply spiritual about the music that that we made. My sister was killed 2 years ago, and it's really kind of difficult for me to talk about it now, still, but I felt that I lost my partner, my sister, my writing partner. I lost so much when I lost Priscilla.
And Rita, I'm so sorry to hear about your loss, and I feel a connection because you share just how special of a relationship you had with your sister in your book, Delta Lady, even to the point where she was waiting for you to be born. And man, that is total sisterhood right there and something special. And Rita, that takes us to what I think a lot of people want to hear about when it comes to just how special music is to you. And we can go back to the beginning, we can start in the middle, but just thinking of how important music, the role it's played in your life, anything you want to share with me?
My mother told me that I sang before I talked, that they would put me in a rocking chair and I would just start humming and whatever songs that had been played around the house that day. So music really was my first language, and it still is the most powerful language that I know. And that's something that Priscilla and I shared, because we've sang from the time I think I was 2 years old when we first started singing it with our other sister as a trio, and I sang harmony when I was two. So I really grew up with not only with my sister by my side, but music being the voice of my soul and the most powerful language that I know. And you know what, Tara? It still is my life. It's my passion. I can't imagine my life without music and without being able to have that form of communication as a birthright and still very, very much alive in me. And amazingly, I feel like I sing better than I ever did. Maybe it's because I don't ever stop.
That's beautiful. And Rita, what about music just as a social voice?
Well, you know, I think that was kind of some of my motivation when I began writing the book. I really wanted to include the decades of the 60s and the 70s when music really did become a way for people to actually sing about what was going on in our world, in our society, you know, the protests against the Vietnamese War and just things that were wrong. I mean, my gosh, Sam Cooke, A Change Is Going to Come, which was about racial inequality and how things needed to change in the world. And before that, music didn't really speak that way. It was more about love and, my God, tiny bubbles or whatever anybody wanted to write a song about. But I think with my generation, it became our voice, and the way that we could communicate and talk about the world around us and about the beautiful things in the world around us, but especially the things that needed to change. Bob Dylan was immensely influential with our generation, because he could. As far as my mother was concerned, she said, "Honey, he just can't sing." But he sure wrote the songs that made people stop and think about what we could do. And I think that really was something that I wanted to speak about in when I wrote the book, how much music became the voice of change.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, or the times they are a-changing.
Enrita, if the industry had its way in the beginning, right now I would have been introducing our audience to Antoinette Lovely. tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, that was, it just makes me laugh every time I think of it. That's why I had to put it in the book. I signed with Pepper Records in Memphis. It was the company that I worked for, and we actually did radio spots and jingles for, my gosh, probably 75% of the radio stations of the country. We changed the call letters. And they formed a record company, and I recorded a song called I Turn Around and Love You. And when we were, of course, doing in the process of the recording contract, and I guess it was their idea of marketing, but they thought that Rita Coolidge didn't sound like a great stage name, and so they chose the name Antoinette Lovely for me, and actually had put it on some pictures that I had done, and I just said, "There's just no way this is going to happen," because who in the world would ever have known it was me, right? I didn't fight as Rita Coolidge my whole life to have somebody change my name to a cartoon.
Well, I'm glad I'm talking to Rita Coolidge right now. And Rita, when you're reminiscing, do any of those jingles still run in your head?
No. They don't at all. Because there was not very much musical about them. They were just, it was just a repetition, something that I wanted to forget as quickly as possible.
So go be peaches and cream.
At the midnight.
Don't cause talk and suspicion. We gon' give an exhibition. We gon' find out what it is all about.
What it all about? What it all about?
This is Native America Calling, and this is After Midnight by Eric Clapton. It's one of the tracks Cherokee musician Rita Coolidge, our native in the spotlight, had the privilege and honor to sing backup on in her lifetime. Other top names she sang with in some form include Ray Charles, Jimi Hendrix, Robbie Robertson, Bob Dylan, Delaney and Bonnie, and this man, Stephen Stills.
If they stand by, and the eagle fly with the dove, and if you can't be with the one you love, honey, love the one you're with, love the one you're with, love the one you're with.
Joe Cocker, who we're hearing right now, was another musician that Rita connected to both on and off stage. And Rita, when you think about all the places that your voice has been over the decades, how does that make you feel, just knowing you've helped some of this music come alive?
Well, as you know, I'm eternally grateful to have been able to share the studio with all of those people that you mentioned, you know, and each one was such a great growing and learning experience, and I don't take anything for granted at all. I'm just so grateful. And as you said, you know, they're, my God, all over the place. It's hard to go anywhere in the world and not find a piece to me there. I think that the work that Walela did with Robbie, honestly, for me, was probably one of the greatest times in my life with Robbie Robertson and the Red Road Ensemble. That's not in my book because my book ends when Kris Kristofferson and I divorce. But in the next book, I will be talking a lot about that and about the experience of being a part of the music for the Native Americans and having worked with Robbie for, my gosh, we've known each other since probably the 1970. Known each other for a very long time, and he's remarkable. He's just one of my favorite people and one of the absolutely the most gifted guitarists and songwriters. I just wish he could get out more, you know?
Well, we have certainly enjoyed his music over the years. And today, folks, if you just are tuning in, we have the privilege and honor to be speaking with Rita Coolidge. We're also finding a little bit about her new book, Delta Lady. Our phone lines are closed today, but if you would like to still participate and join the conversation on social media, we look forward to reading your comments as well on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Rita, let's talk a little bit about those moments in time. You know, the 60s and 70s were a very exciting time for many different reasons. Can you take me back to a moment that really stands out where maybe even you were surprised on where your voice took you?
Well, yeah, you know, the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour was Rock and Roll University, because I had graduated from Florida State University and, you know, it had decided that I was going to, instead of going on to graduate school, that I was going to give myself a year to see if music was really, really going to welcome me. And at the end of that year, I had made my decision. I went back to Florida State and said, I'm going for it. And it seemed like as soon as that decision was made, the doors just started opening, and I had all these great experiences working with Delaney and Bonnie Bramlett, which for me was the best band that I ever worked with. That combination of musicians, we were all Southerners that had been kind of picked up and moved to California, and the music was just the best music the best band I ever worked with. And there was such a camaraderie and such a closeness, and we liked each other. We would play music all day on the bus or wherever we were traveling, and we would get to the town, and we would go to sound check, and we'd go to the room and change and do the gig and go back to somebody's room and sing all night. We just loved music and loved each other.
Take me the road.
then along comes the cockatoo, and we're literally thrown together in a matter of days. We had to have 55 women, children, men. We had a dog. This group of just almost like a circus troupe of getting on this plane and headed out for 2 months of one-nighters. And there was none of that camaraderie. There was none of that closeness that I had only known with Delaney and Bonnie. So it was such a different experience for me to really, I guess that's really kind of when I learned how to be, I guess, more professional, because I wasn't up there with my girlfriend Bonnie. I was up there with people who were playing power trips on each other, and you know, half of the band would be on God only knows what kind of drugs. I was the most naive little Indian girl in the world. I had no idea half the time what was going on. It was a fast and furious education into what music could be like. But of course, every night when Joe hit the stage and started singing, everyone realized why we were there. And for those 2 hours that we were making music, it was perfect. And the rest of the time was just the closest thing to hell I've ever been in.
And that time led you to a special relationship with Joe Crocker, even a song being written for you, or a couple of songs. Anything you want to share about that special relationship?
Well, Joe to me was, he had just come from Sheffield, England, a really small town in the north of England, and his father was a plumber, and Joe would have been a plumber, I guess, if he hadn't taken a chance on with this great instrument of a voice that he was born with. And so he was very naive, I think, in so many ways when he first came to America. He had been at Woodstock, of course, and he had done some tours in England, but he was kind of just almost childlike, with his big eyes all the time, just looking around like, oh, my God, what's going on now? And I felt like I know, because I would sit with Joe on the plane a lot when we would travel at night, and there were times when I just felt like I could not do another day on that tour. I had lost so much weight. I was under 100 pounds, and I'm 5'7", so, you know, I was as skinny as Samantha Rainbow was at one time. And I would sit with Joe, and I'd say, I just can't do it anymore, Joe. And he'd say, you can't leave. You're the only friend I've got. You can't leave me. And I didn't. I stayed because of Joe. I've done many, many things in my life because of that nurturing part of me that just will not, I'm not able to leave someone who needs my help.
This is Native America Calling, and we'll hear more from Rita Coolidge after the break.
Rubbing elbows with experienced entrepreneurs and networking with others interested in building businesses, those are two of the goals that the Native American Youth Empowerment Symposium hopes to achieve. On the next Native America Calling, we'll hear how financial literacy and entrepreneurship are key to empowering the future of Native America.
Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Support made possible by the Utah Office of Tourism, announcing the Four Corner School of Outdoor Education, located at 7,100 feet near the base of the Abajo Mountains in Monticello, Utah. The school's Canyon Country Discovery Center campus is an ideal location for your next tour or vacation. You can learn about Utah's unique canyon country through day trips or week-long adventures. Also available to host meetings, retreats, family reunions, and weddings. Information and reservations at fourcornerschool.org. Support by the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Her song, Turn Around and Love You, on our pre-recorded program. Earlier, Rita was talking about her connection to Joe Cocker. In her memoir, Delta Lady, she writes they grew close over the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour. Their time together also inspired this song, which was dedicated to Rita, and it, too, is called Delta Lady. Also give us a view into good old love, which also for your story includes, you know, some pretty big names in music's history, folks like Leon Russell, Graham, as well as Kris Kristofferson. Anything you want to share about, you know, that special part of the book?
Well, you know, this, when I talk about the relationships in the book, it's, you know, it's not about a kiss and tell thing, because when I started this book, that was the one thing I wanted to avoid. The fact that I had relationships with those people, and it as I wrote in the book, you know, it may sound like I was with every guy in town, but in fact, they were the only people, you know, over a period of years. So it was not, it wasn't like I was out trying to find the most popular musician to get hooked up with. I just happened to be in relationships with people who were remarkable at what they did. We all were very young. We were kids. We were all, there was nobody on the Cocker tour. There was nobody even probably over 25 on that tour. We were just babies. All of those relationships were especially meaningful, especially Graham and Kris, because they remain, to this day, Graham is still a dear, dear friend. I'm going to see him in New York. We're going to interview each other on PBS. Can't wait to see how that turns out. We just laugh about it all the time. It's like, why don't you interview me? He said, no, we're interviewing each other. We're interviewing each other. Okay. And, of course, Kris is... Kris is about to celebrate his 80th birthday on June 22nd, and, you know, I think a great number of people in this country will be celebrating with him, because he is truly a national treasure. He's just a remarkable man with his songwriting. He's done some of the most beautiful photography. He's a social activist and has been for as long as I've known him. What he did with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers, and just the difference that he's made, that his life has made, is truly, truly a statement of his strength and his integrity. He wasn't a great husband, but he sure is a great human being, and he's a good friend, and I love Chris with all my heart, and all of the wives and all of the children.
This is Lover Please by Rita Coolidge and Kris Kristofferson. It earned them a 1976 Grammy for Best Country Vocal Performance by a Duo or Group. Do you remember it? Tweet us your response at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Delta Lady, a memoir by Rita Coolidge with Michael Walker, has laid the path for us today and our native in the spotlight. Its pages have helped us to unlock Rita's story. And as you've heard so far, there are a lot of places music has taken her, both physically and emotionally. As we continue to hear more from this Cherokee Grammy Award-winning artist that we spoke with earlier this summer, if there are things you'd like to share about your connection to Rita and her music, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Today's show is pre-recorded, so our toll-free number is closed. I asked Rita about sharing her life through the pages, including writing about her love life.
It was probably the most frightening part of writing the book after I finished it, and it was very cathartic for me. I wept when I finished reading the first manuscript, because I felt that, you know, oh my gosh, what have I done? I've written this book and everybody's going to know everything about me now. And it's like, you know, the dreams that you have when maybe, I don't know, I have dreams of walking on stage and my wardrobe didn't show up and my bags got lost, and I'm on stage in some flimsy dress and I have no makeup and I feel almost naked. And that's kind of the feeling that I had before the book came out, and especially in the weeks before, because there was no taking it back then. It's like recording an album, and once that album is done, it's like birthing a baby. It's done and it's out there, and you nurture it and pray that it's going to go to the right places with the right intention. So it really, I felt so very vulnerable. But I think that, I really do believe that people who have come to me, who've read the book, and so many of their comments, you know, are that they see the thread of a woman who has been through struggles and been through some really hard times and didn't let anything take me down. It made me stronger, and I think that that's the message that I wanted to relate to women of all ages, you know, that we really can survive anything and come out of it not only stronger but happier. Even the loss of my sister made me so very strong, and she's with me all the time. That's the hardest thing that I've been through in my life, but it did make me stronger.
Rita, that message has definitely come through very clear in the book. And having the courage to just tell your life story, even talking about hard times or times where maybe you got the short end of the stick. There's a couple of moments in the book where you reveal a couple of things that might simply just shock people. Specifically, I'm talking about the song Layla. Tell me more about that, Rita.
Well, I was in a relationship with Jim Gordon, who was, I call him the golden boy, but he was the greatest drummer in the late 60s, early 70s. He was so gifted that he would do a session in New York in the morning and fly to L.A. and do two more sessions that day. He was so in demand. He was absolutely brilliant. And Jim and I were involved for probably close to a year. Of course, there's a tragic end to that story, but I guess you have to read the book because I can't do it all. But Jim and I had written this song together. He came over to my apartment and one day, and he had three or four chords that he played and was just kind of messing around on the piano. And I said, wait a minute, let me sit down, because I actually played better than he did. He was a great drummer, not a great keyboardist. So I sat down and started messing around with these chords and this chord progression, and we started writing this song called Time, or Don't Let the World Get in Our Way.
We've got a million years to show them that our love is real. Things won't work out the way they play.
Sing a song.
We'll take some million years to show them.
This is Time, recorded by Booker T. Jones and Priscilla Jones, Rita's sister. It's the song that contains the piece of music that Rita was just explaining.
And we finished it probably that day. I'm sure we did, because we, you know, got a cassette and recorded it and took it with us when we went to England and played it for Eric Clapton, because we were both on tour with Delaney and Bonnie. And while we were there, we were in the studio with Eric doing some recording for his first solo album. And Jim and I thought it would be a great opportunity to play the song. And I actually sat down at the piano and played and sang the song for Eric in the studio that day. And then we said, here's a cassette. We have a demo here, and left it on the piano. And the room is full of Delaney, Bonnie, Bobby Whitlock, the whole band were there and heard the song, and they knew that it was my song and Jim's song. And about a year later, I was in the studio following the release of my first album, having pictures made, and suddenly I hear this music come over the PA system, and it's so very familiar to me, and I thought, I know this music, it's my song, but I didn't record it. And the guy took pictures of me having a meltdown when I realized what was going on, and I got to the record store after the photo session and picked up that it was Derek and the Dominoes, which was Eric's band, along with the whole band had been the Delaney and Bonnie band, including Jim Gordon, the drummer, Bobby Whitlock, the keyboard player, Carl Radel, the bass player, and Eric were Derek and the Dominoes. And what they had clearly done was taken my song, or mine and Jim's song, and jettisoned the lyrics and just added it to Layla. And it's called The Coda of Layla, which is probably the most beautiful, certainly the most beautiful part of that song.
Thank you.
And then when I went to the record store and picked up the record and my name was not on it, I started trying to contact Eric, and I couldn't get in touch with Eric. I was kind of railroaded through his management company, and they just basically said, what are you going to do? You're a girl. You don't have the money to fight this. We're not doing anything. You're not getting anything. And I started telling the story then because people have, I've seen comments on, you know, on Facebook and places where people go, well, I don't know what took her so long to tell the story. Well, I've been telling the story since 1969, so it's not a new story, but it's in black and white, and it's in my book, and there are so many people who were there who backed me up on that. Priscilla and Booker actually recorded the song "Time" on one of their albums, and nobody said a word from Eric's camp, and they still aren't saying anything. So, I think the only consolation that I have, because Jim Gordon eventually murdered his mother. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, I'm sure exacerbated by the drugs that he eventually started doing massive doses of drugs. I think they all did during Derek and the Dominoes. But Jim had a little girl. Her name was Amy. She was the sweetest little thing, and we used to take her out when her mother would let us, because her mother liked me and trusted me, and we would take Amy places to the zoo or to Disneyland, and she was just a precious child. And knowing that the money from Jim's royalties for Layla went to that child have given me peace.
Long ago, so far away, I fell in love with you before the second show.
Rita, this happened kind of again with another huge song, and I had the chance to just sit down and listen to Superstar, and was just thinking of the words in your book and what you shared about it, and also listening to Layla, and thinking, you know, some of the beauty that you have definitely brought to this world. Is there anything you want to say about the song Superstar?
Well, I was actually reminded by Bonnie Bramlett after I sent Bonnie the book when it first came out, and she wrote me a letter back, and she wrote me actually two or three letters, and one of them was about Superstar, and she just said, Rita, she said, I know what happened. She said, I was actually, I was in the room by myself one night, and you came down and knocked on my door and came in and sang this song for me. You had the verse and most of the chorus done, and you sang it for me, and we sat down and worked on it for a minute and then finished it, and Delaney came in, and the three of us actually did a demo. She said, I'm going to be looking for it until I find it. She said, but when the record came out and your name wasn't on it, she said, I just wondered why you never said anything. And I said, you know, Bonnie, at that time, she was in such an abusive relationship with Delaney. I mean, he literally, a lot of the times that Bonnie and I would spend together, because we were best friends, we still are, she would go back to the house or go back to her room, and what awaited her was Delaney's fist in her face. And I didn't want to create another incident for Bonnie by causing trouble, by speaking up and saying, why don't I have writer's credit on this? It was my song. And honestly, I'm not sorry, because any pain that I might have avoided for her from at his hands, even if it was just one time, it's worth it because she's such a lovely woman. And she also wrote me a letter and said, I just want to thank you for telling the truth. She said, because when I write my book, I hope I have as much grace and honesty as you've had telling your story. You know what? In any situation, if something happens and there are four people in the room, there can be four different versions of what happened in a conversation or in anything that happens. And I think that it's important for that very reason. Nobody else has my perspective and would know my truth if I don't tell my story. And it's vitally important that women, especially who are in an abusive situation, tell their story, tell somebody, and get away from it, because it doesn't have to be that way. Men are so manipulative with women because they think they have the strength and they have the power. But in fact, we have the power. We have the power to walk away from it and find another life. And I walked away from it. I was hit one time, and I walked away from that man and never spoke to him again. And I told people that he hit me. Everybody knew it. But yeah, if you stick around, then you start to participate in it, and you start to believe that's what you deserve. And nobody deserves that. Nobody deserves to be hit ever once.
Rita Coolidge, who we're hearing from on our pre-recorded program today, also said she gained a lot of strength from sharing her story. She added, even if it's talking about hard times, it's worth it. Much of what Rita shared with us is mirrored in her memoir, Delta Lady. There are many more memories that connect readers to her life and music, even being told early on in her career that she didn't have what it takes to be a star. Well, as you've heard, she's pushed through that and has given music lovers many songs, including this one that earned her a lot of attention. It's called We're Alone. And right after it, you'll also be gifted with another tune, Your Love Has Lifted Me Higher and Higher, that many have also come to love over the years.
Close your eyes and dream, and you can be with me. Beneath the waves, through the caves of ours, long forgotten land, we're all alone. We're all
Rita, taking a look back, especially what you've shared in the book, what would you like people to know about this journey that you've been on called your life?
Well, that's certainly it's, I always say it's been a great ride, but I feel like now, as we become elders, we really do, I think, have a different perspective on looking back. You know, some people call it looking in the rearview mirror. For me, to be able to just write this book and put everything down, I'm able to leave that in the past now, and to realize that, you know, today is the best day I've ever had, because I'm talking to you. It's a beautiful day outside. I have everything that I need. I've got a roof over my head, and I have. It's just having that is, I'm way above most of the people on the planet, to just have food in my stomach and a roof over my head, and I'm grateful for that. And if I can make people realize anything, it really is that to be present right now with the gifts that are given to you right now, and not to be wishing that I had what somebody else has. I don't need it. I have everything I need. And my life is full and complete, and I'm busier than I've been in my entire life, and my life is fuller, and I'm just grateful for all of these things.
Rita, thank you so much for sharing it with us and sharing it with us here on Native America Calling. Rita Coolidge, it has been a pleasure and honor to visit with you today.
Tara, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much. And I just want everyone out there to, you know, if you get a chance to read the book, I hope you enjoy it and gain some strength from it, and maybe just a little bit of love and insight.
That's going to do it for our program today. Thanks to Rita Coolidge for bringing us closer to a special time in her life and music's history. The name of her book is Delta Lady, and there's a link to it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. That's also where you can find an archive of today and all of our programs. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, including our engineer, Stephen Emmons. Also thanks to Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Voice One, and National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood, and it has been an honor to learn more about our Native nations once again through the music.
Hamitakipiki, Lakota na wazia oyate, which shows any wapi 2016 Yuhapishni hunters or Yushkea umpi wapi iwoyaja luha oyakihi yellow. Le wapiki 8965 glushta yohichel mazaska yakjuktela. Wo yin riluhawa, lemas apkayo 1-800-318-2596 nishlil yayo healthcare.gov/tribal. Le wotchaniki Medicare na Medicaid o tietahi yellow.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, proud to provide traditional and contemporary American Indian craft supplies from feathers, furs, and hides to conchos, fringe, shells, and beads, all available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.